Good morning. My name is Marissa, and I'll be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the NBPE Investor Call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there'll be a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you, Mr. Vonlay. You may now begin the conference.
Hello, everyone. This is Peter Vonlay, and welcome to the NBPE Investor Update Call. I'm here today with my partner, John Boozer, and as always, you can find the presentation that we'll be using today, as well as our other reports and presentations on our website, www.nbprivateequitypartners.com. The figures we're going to be mentioning today will be as of April 2016, unless we note otherwise. Let's begin on page one of the presentation. The investment objective of NBPE is to provide investors with the opportunity for both capital appreciation and current income by investing directly into private equity-backed companies. With this investment strategy, we invest across the capital structure of private equity-backed businesses, and we have the flexibility and the skills to invest in either the equity or the debt of these sorts of businesses and can take advantage of a best relative value approach in deciding where in a company, a private equity-backed company's capital structure is the best balance between risk and return. We do this using the sourcing and due diligence capabilities of Neuberger Berman's $35 billion private equity platform, and we do this very efficiently at a lower all-in cost to investors than other listed private equity vehicles. So page three, you can see a little bit about Neuberger Berman's private equity platform. At Neuberger Berman, we manage $35 billion in the private equity asset class. We have 100 investment professionals, including 55 senior professionals. We are active investors with over 400 different private equity funds. And while NBPE itself is not engaged in all the range of activities that Neuberger Berman's private equity platform is, NBPE does benefit from the reach and depth that this platform provides. So let's look at some of NBPE's key performance highlights on page four. So far, year-to-date during 2016, the NAV per share total return has been 0.5%. The share price return has been minus 1.9%, but the share price total return, including dividends, is 0.4%. The capital position of the company is strong. We have $845 million of total assets and a 298% adjusted commitment coverage ratio. Cash flows have been active so far year to date. We've had $77 million in realizations and $70 million of new investments. And we've paid out to our shareholders $12.2 million of dividends. In terms of those dividends, that's resulted in an annualized dividend yield on NAV of 3.6%, or dividend yield on share price of 4.8%, and our dividend is 113% covered by the cash income from the income investments in our portfolio. Now I'd like to turn it over to John Boozer, who will go into more detail on these figures as well as discuss some of our recent realizations and new investment activities and otherwise describe the investment portfolio that we built for you. John?
Yeah, thank you, Peter. So if you're on page five now, this is our summary balance sheet for NBPE. And just a few numbers there to highlight. You see the far right column is where we were at the end of the year, 12/31, and the left column is the April 30th numbers, the current numbers. First, if you look at the top of those sheet of numbers, the direct co-investments, as you can see between the income investments going up slightly and the equity investments staying about the same, the total direct co-investments, as it has quarter after quarter, continues to grow. And going down to the next line, the legacy fund investments continue to decline as those investments are realized and no new fund investments are made. So we're continuing to make steady progress towards our goal of being a total direct co-investment, whether it be income or equity co-investment platform for you to, as Peter said, provide a very fee-efficient avenue into private equity. You can see, as you go a little bit lower on that chart, some of the more balance sheet items related to our capital structure. You can see the cash and cash equivalents remain very constant from the end of the year to the end of April. The credit facility borrowings are up $15 million during the quarter. And, of course, as EDP shares continue to accrete at the pace they do under their contract. The net asset value per share is at the bottom. It's declined from 1435 to 1407, or 1432 when you take into account the 25% dividend that was paid during that four-month period. If you flip on to page six, you'll see the fair value development of NBPE since December 2015. At that point, we were at 1435. We've realized 49 cents per share worth of gains on items that have been disposed of, but mark-to-markets during the first part of the year have not been strong, with a 59-cent decline in the mark-to-markets of our portfolio that we continue with. Again, we received 22 cents of yield income and dividends, and then some smaller items, but a larger item being the 25-cent outflow for the dividend that we paid, getting to the 1407 April 2016 NAV at the far right of that page. If you look on to the next page, page 7, you'll see the portfolio liquidity over the past 5 quarters, basically. You can see continued consistent liquidity from quarter to quarter. The first 4 months of this year, $77 million realized, $39 million in equity realizations, 11 from the fund historic portfolio, and 27 from the income direct portfolio. Moving on to page 8 is our capital deployment. And this, again, shows on the left side the capital deployment by quarter, and on the right side portfolio that we hold today. So starting on the left side, you can see a consistent capital deployment. Obviously, as we realize both equity and income investments, we need to find investments to replace those to keep the investment level up for NBPE. And because of the platform that Peter talked about, we're able to pull from that platform and provide, both, as you see in the first part of this year, significant amount of income and equity investment into the portfolio. You also see a very small part, 0.4, is the fund investment at the bottom of that year-to-date 2016, showing the roll-off of those funds, relatively small, almost non-existent capital calls across that whole chart. On the right side, I think it's a very important chart. It's the year of our investment, and you can see most all of our investments are from more recent years, showing the health of our portfolio, that the private equity managers are able to buy companies, operate the companies and dispose of them, or on the credit investments are refinanced ahead of maturity, and as a result, we continue to refresh our portfolio with new investments. So you see old investments, 2008 and earlier, make up only 10% of our portfolio at this time, with new investments from 2016, 2015, 2014, 2013 making up the substantial bulk of our portfolio. If you move on to page 9, this shows the relationship of the different types of investments that are continue to be in our fund. And you see the equity investments, where we attempt to make capital gains, are 43% of our portfolio. The income investments provide attractive risk return. Securities senior to equity investments in the private equity industry still, and mostly in buyout companies, and they represent 36% of our assets. And then the legacy fund investments, which are in realization mode, represent 21%. So again, that 21% will continue to shrink, and the equity and income investments continue to rise quarter by quarter. If you move on to page 10, we obviously feel both diversification is very important, but we also feel you need to be very tactical in where you overweight your portfolio. So we have overweighted our portfolio consistently to North America, especially since the global financial crisis. That's been the opinion of Neuberger Berman, private equity, both in NBPE and in other funds that we manage on a private basis, that the risk returns in the developed markets are best in North America, given both the somewhat more stable financial system in North America, as well as the slightly greater growth that North America has produced over the last several years as compared to Europe. We think we've been rewarded for that over the last 7 or 8 years in making that decision. And then, again, by industry, though, we are very broadly diversified, as you see on the right-hand side of the page, with many, many different sectors represented in our broad portfolio. If you move on to page 11, this talks about our NBPE equity investment portfolio. And again, keeping with the theme of diversification, it's a very diversified portfolio with 78 equity co-investments with $348.2 million of fair value. It's diversified, as our whole portfolio is, across vintage years, geographies, and industries. A few stats across the portfolio are on the right. The enterprise value at which our companies are valued is 10.3x times EBITDA, where the Russell 2000 would be at 19.7. So we think it's a very reasonably valued portfolio. The leverage level on average in our companies is 4.7x of EBITDA. Again, we think that's a very reasonable ratio in our portfolio. The last 12 months, the companies have grown revenues by 3% and EBITDA by 15%. So the companies are being managed towards good exits by our general partners. And in 2016, we've had 5 exits thus far in this part of the portfolio with a 3.4x gross multiple and 20% gross IRR. If you look on page 12, a bit more detail on that equity portfolio. 92% of the investments are held at or above cost. You can see in the pie chart on the left side of the page that 43% are between 1x and 1.9x. 23% are at cost. 8% are underperforming at less than 1x. And 27% of our NAV is represented by companies that are beyond a 2x at this point in our portfolio. You also see the gross multiple by vintage year. And the older years at the bottom, you see 2006 and 7, a lower result as a result of investing into the global financial crisis. And then a series of positive years thereafter, with the older of those years, 2008 and 2009, being the highest as the companies that had more time to mature. So it's a very natural progression from a higher multiple towards a lower multiple as you get up to the more recent years as those companies continue to mature. Realizations are covered for the direct equity portfolio on page 13. What you'll see there is both 2014, 15, and 16, the number of companies that we exited. And you see it was 5, 8, and 5 during the three years, with 2016 obviously just being 4 months. So you see the number of exits at a very good pace compared to prior years, and a 3.4x multiple on those that are already realized, with $66.3 million. Of proceeds realized by MBPE on those exits. Also, a very interesting thing that occurs in our portfolios and in private equity often is that the marks that our managers have tend to be quite conservative compared to where they are at the exit. So what you see here on page 14 is that the 3 quarters prior to the exit of the companies we've exited since January 2014, so this is over 9 quarters, there's been a 24.4% increase in the exit value compared to the carrying value from 3 quarters prior, 14% 2 quarters prior, and 6% 1 quarter prior. So as managers move very close to their exits, the markups occur. But prior to the exit, when you go a year or more, they tend to have a lot of room for markup in those companies. We continue to make new investments to keep our equity investment levels up, and you'll see those listed on page 15. These are 7 new equity investments where we've invested $36 million this year. You can see the companies range from consumer retail to technology companies and life sciences companies, so continuing to provide us a broad range of diversification. You can also see the sponsors, different size sponsors with different focuses and different geographic locations as well. Page 18, or 16, I should say, shows the largest equity investments at this point. And again, this goes to our diversification. You see the largest investment in the equity is 2.4% of our NAV at $16.3 million. As we continue to try to keep a very well-diversified portfolio, so the companies that tend to be the largest here tend to be the ones that have appreciated into these positions. On page 17, we've switched now to the NBPE direct income investments. So this, again, is a very well-diversified portfolio. We've designed it to make sure it yields cash in order to cover our dividend. There are 46 income investments. They total $296 million of fair value and have very strong cash yields. You see on the right, again, some of the statistics on the portfolio, 10.1% cash yield and a 10.7% estimated yield to maturity. Obviously, most of these companies are required to refinance these generally about a year or so out before maturity. So the actual estimated yield to the likely realization date, assuming there's not a prepayment because of a transaction, tends to be a little bit higher than the 10.7%. The position in the capital structure, The 4.0x, that's the senior debt that's ahead of our positions generally, and the total debt in these companies is 5.2x. We tend to do a lot of investing in companies with low capex, so there's much of the EBITDA is realized as free cash flow, and those debt levels tend to decrease over the life of our holding these debt investments. We have mostly variable rate debt. 85% of the fair value is in floating rate debt, and it supports our dividend coverage, as you see, with 113% dividend coverage. Some of the characteristics of our income portfolio are on page 18. First of all, they're in strong private equity-backed companies, backed by sponsors who we have confidence in. The securities are senior to the equity. So the stats on this page, 98% of the income investments are in asset-like companies, again, meaning that there isn't significant capex to be done, and the cash flow can be used to reduce debt. 72% of the income investments are in market-leading companies. 53% are in companies with at least a 40% equity cushion. 53% of the income investments are in companies with an EBITDA margin of greater than 25%. We think these last two points, as well as the market-leading position, make these very defensive positions that we hold. And 100% of the income investments are in performing credits with no covenant issues to date. Page 19, again, is just a summary of a few of the income investments that we've made during 2016. We've made five of them for $24.8 million. Again, you'll see they're in a variety of different industries, and the description of the companies are on the right, very different companies, as you can see. Our largest income investments are on page 20. And again, you see the largest investment we have is 3.1% of NAV as we continue to create a well-diversified portfolio. So with that, I'll turn it back over to Peter.
Thank you, John. Turning to page 21, you can see a bit on our historic performance here in terms of both NAV and share price. Year-to-date, we're up slightly, both in terms of NAV and share price total return. Our one-year performance, frankly, has been under what we seek to achieve, and as you can see, we've had strong longer-term performance. As John described, we believe we have a high-quality portfolio, and that portfolio is well-positioned. So we're looking to generate future performance that's in line with or better than our longer-term historical performance inside NBPE, and frankly, better than what we've experienced over the last 1 year. Page 22 shows some information on our dividends. Our income portfolio is $296 million, as John described, with a 10.1% cash yield. That generates run rate cash income of 56 cents a share, and we're paying a dividend currently of 50 cents a share annualized. That provides an annualized yield of 4.8% on share price or 3.6% on NAV. If you compare then the run rate cash income versus our dividend, we have 113% dividend coverage ratio. Page 23 gives some information on our capital position at NBPE. NBPE has a very strong capital position. You can see the various numbers here, but the 298% adjusted commitment coverage ratio. Importantly, though, for NBPE, we have a strong capital position, but important for us is to continue to maintain that strong position in the future. Currently, we have our credit facility and ZDPs both maturing in 2017. NBPE is currently in active discussions and planning with regard to these financings, and those discussions include discussions involving a new credit facility. We will make an announcement on these matters at the appropriate time, but rest assured that it's a matter that the company, the board, and the manager take very seriously, and we're actively engaged in making sure that we continue to have a strong capital position into the future. Page 24 gives information on share price and NAV development that we discussed on the prior page. So let's turn to page 25, which shows our discount to NAV relative to various comps. As you can see, NBPE continues to trade roughly in line with the listed private equity peers rather than in relation to credit funds. MBP is currently at 26% discount, whereas the listed private equity peers are 24 or 24.5% or so discount. We believe that the discount of MBP is not warranted. You know, from areas that we've described, we think given the quality of our portfolio, the covered dividend that MBPE has, as well as our more efficient fee structure. So talking about that more efficient fee structure, you can see on page 26, we understand that, frankly, fees and expenses in private equity vehicles and listed private equity vehicles are not as transparent as perhaps they should be. And we just want to lay out some of the facts here in a bit more detail. We believe that MVP offers access to a diverse private equity portfolio at a lower cost than most of the other listed private equity vehicles out there. Just comparing the different options that an investor has, they're the listed fund of funds. These vehicles charge a fee at the level of that listed fund of funds, and that's typically the fee that's disclosed. But in addition to that fee, there's typically a 1.5% to 2% management fee on committed capital and a 20% carry at the underlying fund level. And so that can be a very extensive fee burden, and frankly, that typically does not show up in the expense item of that listed fund of funds. Those sorts of portfolios are typically hyper-diversified, and also when they pursue over-commitment strategies, while it's necessary to maintain a full investment level, can create significant capital structure risk due to the uncertainty of timing of those cash flows. To compare them to listed direct vehicles, those typically have a single layer of fees, but frankly at a higher level than MBPE. Typically they charge 1.5% plus management fees on NAV, and some charge on NAV plus unfunded commitments, and they also typically have 15 to 20% carries. There's concentrated lead manager risk, and there's also typically a more concentrated portfolio. In addition, a number of these direct vehicles also invest in third-party funds that have a double layer of fees. Compare that to MBPE. MBPE has a single layer of fees on our direct investments, 1.5% on NAV and a 7.5% carry, so less expensive than the listed direct vehicles have. MBP has the benefit of being direct investments, but also with a more diversified portfolio, because since we are investing alongside other private equity managers and top-tier managers, getting a greater diversity in terms of both the number of portfolio companies, but also in terms of the lead manager risk there. And also, given our strategy of focusing on making direct investments, we have a much more limited overcommitment risk. So with that, we believe MBPE continues to provide a compelling investment opportunity for our shareholders. We have the opportunity for capital appreciation and growth from our equity investments, income to our investors through an attractive covered dividend supported by the cash yield from our income portfolio, a strong capital structure, and a very efficient fee structure. So with that, I'd like to open it up to any questions that you may have.
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Again, that's star one to ask a question. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Once again, to ask a question, please press star one. Your first question comes from the line of Charles Murphy with Panmure Gordon.
Gentlemen, good morning. Got a couple of questions, and then I'll step off, let someone else ask a question, and I'll ask a couple more. Can you talk me through the valuation decline in Q1? You sort of basically said they got marked down, but you didn't say what. So slide six.
Yeah, sure. It's frankly a combination of different factors. Some obviously certain of them were equity investments, certain of them were debt investments. I think what we tried to do is be very thoughtful about the valuations that we have in the portfolio, be appropriately conservative in those valuations. So for example, on the income investments, where we thought there was, on certain of the investments where there's actually a mark, we actually will take the mark that's out there if we think that it's actually a real mark. And so even if there's no credit issues in a company, if there's an issue there where it's a instrument that's traded, and the value goes and it, you know, the price goes down, we'll mark that accordingly, for example. And so, you know, that's on that side of it. On the equity side, once again, you know, we look to have appropriately conservative marks. So even if there's not an issue in a company, and if a company is performing, if the comps trade down significantly, you know, we'll go and consider marking something down. You know, even if the company performance, even if the EBITDA continues to do well in that business. So those are all the sort of things that we're, you know, those are the methodologies that we use. And, as you could see from that chart that John showed, the exits that we have in our portfolio, that page 14 of the presentation, you tend to have exit values that are, materially higher than the carrying values that we have. And, you know, one of the reasons for that, you know, partly it's from the growth in the businesses, but it's also, very frankly, because we, are not shy about, marking things down when that's appropriate. And so, given that, the portfolio that we have, as well as, frankly, private equity in general, is marked at an average EBITDA multiple on the equity side, for example, that's materially below the marks on of public stocks, even though the companies tend to be growing EBITDA quicker, we think that provides our valuations are appropriately conservative, but we think that the portfolios are of high quality and provide the opportunity for generating appropriate returns between where we are holding them at and exit. Obviously, it varies by company, but that's the main
thing. I wasn't querying the valuations. I was looking for insights into specific movers, and what you're saying is it was small bits here and there, nothing specific.
The small bits part, yes, it's very specific, right? It's not, we don't do top down, everything's bottoms up in terms of the valuation.
Yeah.
But you're exactly right. It wasn't one or two things that were big write downs. It was. It tended to be a number of – that's the issue of us having a diversified portfolio, right? So it was multiple things where we were taking valuation movements as opposed to one or two, companies that drove it.
Your earnings growth – your earnings growth data is still as at December. Have you got any color for how the portfolio traded in Q1?
We do that exercise, twice a year rather than four times a year. So the short answer there is we don't have the full numbers there, as of Q1. Anecdotally, just some companies, continue to do very well. Others not quite as well. But so it's hard to give a specific statement on that. We are continuing to have the managers continue to do well with their companies, but the individual trading of the companies is, don't want to make a statement on that that's not, fully based on fact.
Okay, well, I'll jump off now and I'll come back on for a couple more questions.
Sure.
Once again, to ask a question, please press star one. Your next question comes from line of Ian Scaller with Stifel.
Good morning, Peter. It's Ian Scaller at Stifel. In terms of the debt segment of the portfolio, I'm wondering if there's anything you can say just in terms of how market conditions have changed at the start of the year, or pricing, or demand for debt. Is there much going on?
Yeah, well, I guess a couple things there. First of all, just the term for someone who has capital to deploy into the debt space, which is what we are, frankly, terms have gotten better from our side, which means, worse from a borrower's perspective, better from a lender's perspective. For example, a typical credit that, a year ago might have been able to borrow at L plus 850, that's probably 850, L plus 850 or L plus 900 is probably L plus 1,000 today, all other things being equal. So, just yields have gone up a bit, so that's a good thing, for someone like us that has capital to deploy. in the space. Another thing, though, is that, frankly, it's been very volatile and choppy. So what we have also done is positioned ourselves and our portfolios, but also, frankly, just from a team and resource perspective, over the last couple of years, we've added resources to be more focused on secondary market activities. So there's a large number of private equity-backed credits that we watch very carefully. And when we hit air pockets in the market, due to not based on company performance typically as much, but really more based upon what's going on in the market overall, when there tends to be a dislocation, even a short-term one, we take advantage of that. So what you should expect to see from us is when those sort of air pockets occur in the marketplace, for us to be investing a bit more out of for our income portfolio, maybe perhaps a bit less during a period where there aren't those air pockets. So taking advantage of that fact, of the fact that we have information and knowledge on lots of different private equity-backed companies, as well as a pool of capital that we can be opportunistic with, we think creates a good opportunity for us. So it is a situation where the markets, as they become more volatile, creates more opportunity for us.
Okay, thanks, Peter.
Your next question comes from the line of John Newlands with Brewin Dolphin.
Hi, yes, hello from me. I know you've got the zero dividend preference share that expires next May, and you touched upon it. I mean, you've got cash in hand to cover that, haven't you? But is it causing any discomfort until that thing is repaid? And secondly, is there any possible likelihood you'd renew it with another zero share?
Sure. Well, two things there. One, obviously, we'll make appropriate statements when we can. There, obviously, we have a lot of thoughts on those topics, but we have to just base ourselves in facts, and as I say, we're actively engaged in discussions on refinancing for a credit facility, and we'll make an appropriate announcement when appropriate on that. In terms of the zero, the view we've expressed for a while is that we actually think that a zero is a very appropriate portion of a capital structure of a listed private equity vehicle, just as a conceptual matter, right? Just given the long-term illiquid nature of private equity, having a liability that's long-dated as well, and one that doesn't require the cash payment of interest, is also attractive. But it's all a question of price and rate. So to your point about the ability to refinance, we are comfortable that we'd be in a position to repay the current zero when it comes due, refinance it. And frankly, which path we decide to go down would based upon, frankly, what the relative costs are for NBPE at the appropriate time. We're open-minded to the idea of a zero, but it's just a question of what's in the best interest of shareholders there in terms of what's the most effective capital structure that we can have there.
Okay, thank you.
Your next question comes from line of Charles Murphy with Panmure Gordon.
Back again. You've got Funding Circle in your income portfolio. Do you want to talk a bit about that? And then also, can you talk a bit about your uptick in exit volumes for Q1 2016? Is that just a product of sort of overall maturity of this strategy?
Yeah, I guess it's a couple things there. So in terms of the income investments and Funding Circle, just to be clear there, where that is that's actually a portfolio of loans. So it's actually it's a large number of small loans that aggregate the NAV that's shown in the presentation. Importantly, these are small business loans. These are not consumer loans. So when we've done some of these marketplace lending sorts of activities, and we've done it in a small amount, not a large amount, When we have done it, it's been focused on, as I say, on small business rather than the consumer loans, because we think that's just more in line with first of all, we like the risk-return profile of those better, and then also I think that's more in line just with the investment strategy of MVP as opposed to, you know, the consumer side of things. And as you know, there's been a fair amount of press in general about these, but particularly more on the consumer side. On the exit there, John, do you want to take that one? Obviously, there's a bit of, you know, idiosyncratic nature of which investments happen to be realized at any given point in time and how long those, you know, happen to have been in the portfolio. So, John, do you want to take that one?
Yes. So, you know, the uptick is just a function of you see it goes, as you look in the chart, quarter by quarter, up and down, up and down. And it's just a function of the timing of the underlying general partners who we co-invested with on the equity side, or in the case of the credit investments, it's a function of companies being sold and therefore the debt being repaid. Generally triggers the early prepayments. And so whether it's you're looking at Q1 or any of the prior quarters, it is not really a strategic move by us to have an uptick. And it's not really based an uptick in Q1 versus the prior quarters is not really based on the maturity of the portfolio, because the portfolio was quite mature in the prior quarters as well. But it just happens to be when things fall from the sponsors making moves with their companies, that either gets the debt paid off or the equity realized.
And we also added in Q1, you know, a large realization of a position that had been in the portfolio for a long time that it actually had continued to compound and compound and compound. And so it just became a very large position. It was actually Sabre, you know, which we had in the portfolio for a long time. So when we finally did the realization, you know, had the realization on that, sold the stock there, it just was it was a large dollar amount and a large multiple because it had been in the portfolio for a long time and continued to grow during that whole period.
Okay, thank you.
There are no further questions at this time.
Well, thank you very much for your attention today, and thank you very much to everyone for your questions as well. If there's any additional information that you'd like or areas you'd like us to further clarify, please feel free to contact us, and we'll be happy to answer your questions and or include additional information in our future reports and presentations. Thanks again.
This concludes today's conference. You may now disconnect.